there's so many things that we read about in the Bible that don't fully make sense to us because we Americanize things. You know what I'm saying? The culture, in different cultures, they do things and they do them differently than what we do. So then when we tell this story, we put it in our terminology. It's just like we tell the Christmas story. And the Christmas story we often demonstrate through the nativity set. And we'll put out the little, you know, the little building out there and the little manger and all that other stuff. It was more likely a cave. And the manger was cut out of the rock. And it wasn't like that. And that was just part of the culture. So if you went over there, you're looking for the manger, and they would be like, this is it. You'd be like, that looks nothing like when Jesus was born in a tomb. It was cut out of the rock. And it was in the garden. And the garden was much different than what we thought. Well, their banquets and their dinners and the things that they did were so drastically different than what we would do. And it's the same thing if we were to reverse the roles. And we were to do something like, for instance, we have traditions that we do that people in other countries would be like, that's just weird. Okay, let me give you one. Like when we have the head table at a wedding, we line it up and we normally announce the bride and groom, and they come in from the side or from the back and we announce their name and they take the center. And then we talk about the maid of honor and the best man, and they have the seat left and right. And then we have a line of girls and a line of guys, and that's the wedding party that's lined up next to them. And then somebody will stand up and they say, I'm the best man, and I want to make a toast, or I want to give a speech about my friend or my brother, whoever it is. And then the girl does it on this other side, the maid of honor. And then there's usually tables that are set up for the guests, and the tables that are closest to them are usually the immediate family. Now, if for another country, they would sit in and go, this doesn't make sense. But in our context, if that happened, nobody would scratch their heads going, what's going on here? Why are they sitting at a separate table? It makes sense. It's part of our culture. It's the same thing if we had a Thanksgiving dinner and we were to get together as a family, that normally the dad or the head of household or whoever it would be maybe sit at the head of the table. They would lead in prayer, and usually like mom would sit next to them. And then we have this thing that we do because not everybody can sit at the table. So we have a second smaller table. What's that second smaller table called? The kids table. That's right. And some of you are still at the kids table. And it's just because you haven't learned how to use a napkin or whatever. And you're just like, but it's part of our culture. It's part of our traditions. It's part of what we do. And it makes sense to us. Let me show you what Leonardo da Vinci, or DiCaprio, one of those guys, painted this picture of the Last Supper. And in this picture, we often show about what the Lord's Supper, the Last Supper, that communion time that they had would look like. Well, I'm going to tell you guys, in culture, if the Jewish people looked at that, they would be like, what is that? That has nothing to do with what we would do. That doesn't look anything like it. It's way out of context of the culture. First of all, they didn't sit on one side. Secondly, it was lower to the table. A lot of times it was shaped in a U, and the host usually didn't sit in the middle. So a lot of that was just off of the context of that. And so it was more like a three-sided table called a triglinium. Three-sided triglinium, which is reclining table. So it was more like one of these pictures here. And it makes sense because if you read it in context of when John, the Bible says, that was leaning on the breast of Jesus or on the chest of Jesus, it would have been like if they were laying like that and they would roll over, it would have been just wanting to talk and he would have just kind of rolled over to talk because of the way they would sit. And sometimes they would sit up on one arm and they would eat with the other, or they would lounge there. And it makes sense because we talk about this being a time of communion. We don't just talk about it as being a meal. This was a time of fellowship. It was intimate connection. It was a time set aside just for those to be able to connect with one another with outside the world being there. It wasn't like a public venue thing that they would do. But there was rules at the table. If you got invited to a meal, you did not just sit down anywhere. There were some places of honor and some places, I wouldn't say of dishonor, but of less honor. And so Jesus was teaching about this one time. He went to the chief priest or the chief Pharisee for a meal. In the middle of it, Jesus said, I'll teach you a visual of this. I want to teach a lesson. So in Luke chapter 14, and we'll stay in Luke for a while, Jesus gives this example of being invited to a wedding feast. So the wedding feast would be a lot like those tables like that. It would have been something like that. It might have been bigger or whatever. And he said in verse 8 of Luke 14, when thou art bidden, invited of any man to a wedding, sit not down at the highest room or the highest seat, lest more honorable man than thou be bidden or invited of him. He said, just don't walk in the room. And that's what we do. It's like, hey, where's so-and-so sitting? And it's like, well, we're really tight friends. So you go over and you sit down next to him. He said, don't do that. He said, there's a chance that you're going to look like a fool, because the guests or the host would walk in and say, I hate to do this to you. Actually, it says this. It says, I need you to move. I hate to do this. And you need to stand up because I've got somebody that I invited as my honorable guest. He says in verse 9, he says, and he that bade thee or invited you, and he said, come in and say to thee, give this man your place or give this man your seat. And thou begin with shame to take the lowest room or the lowest seat. You talk about embarrassed. It's like you're sitting there like, man, we're friends. We go way back. I was invited to this, and you take your seat. You just assume that. And then you get up and you're like, oh man, I'm sorry. And then you go around to the other side of the table. Now, there were certain spots. Some of it would be the guard of somebody that would sit at the end, and where they sat according to where the servants would be. And it was a U shape like that, because if you had money or if you could afford it, sometimes they would have servants that would walk into the middle of the U shape and they would serve them like that. Well, the servant at this feast was Jesus. It was different. But Jesus said, don't take up the seat that is more honorable. He says, verse 10, he said, there's a better way of doing it. He said, but when thou art bidden or invited, go and sit down in the lowest room or the lowest seat. And when he had bade thee, when the person that invited you cometh, and he say unto thee, friend, go up higher. Then shalt thou have worship or honor in the presence of them that sit at meat with thee. So he says, it's so much better. He said, listen, just take the humble side of this. Walk into the table and you just say, I'll just sit down here, no big deal. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to take next to the host or whatever, and I'll just sit at this lower seat. And then he said, it's so much better it's being honored in front of everybody. If he comes up and taps you on the shoulder and goes, hey, what are you doing down there? He goes, man, I told you I wanted you to be here. It means the world to me that you're here. And it's literally, he says, a get of worship or honor. He said, why don't you move over here? He said, I am the host. He said, you sit right next to me. This is where I want you to sit. Jesus was talking and teaching this lesson about humility. You say, what does this have to do with the Easter story? It has everything to do with it. Today we're focusing on the Last Supper or that upper room. But there's so many things that we read of that, and we scratch our head and we think, I wonder what that means. What did that, he died on Friday. The night before he died, now this is Palm Sunday that we're celebrating right now, and that's when Jesus came in and they were crying out, Hosanna, and he would be the sacrifice, and they would choose the lamb that would die on Passover. Well, they were celebrating Jesus on that day because he was the lamb that would be the sacrifice. And they didn't even fully understand that what they were doing, that he would come in triumphantly and he would come in being honored and glorified, and all these things that happened had significance. But the night before Jesus died, he was in the upper room with the disciples and he was having the Last Supper. Now, I want you to see that everything is for a reason. Everything has significance to this. In Luke chapter 22, and you can flip forward and jump up to where we're at, in verses 4 and 5, Judas met with the chief priest and he made a deal to betray Jesus. So he goes in there and he makes the deal. So the deal has already been made, but he part of the deal was, we learn from verse 6, he said, part of the deal was, he said, I'm gonna find out, I'm with him all the time, I know his schedule, I know what we do. He said, I'll find a time that Jesus is alone, not in a crowd. Actually, it says, and he promised and sought opportunity to betray him unto them in the absence of the multitude, because they didn't want an uproar. There was strategy. So now Judas is thinking in the back of his mind, I know this schedule, I know what we do, I know where we meet, I have a plan, I'll figure this out. So he goes with the other disciples and say, hey, where are we going tonight, guys? We don't know. What do you mean we don't know? Because I don't know what's going on. Jesus just said that he has it all figured out. Let me tell you, Jesus' hand in every bit of it was the hand of God, and the timing of God was perfect. When you think, and again, get off on a rabbit trail here, but sometimes when you think this isn't adding up or this doesn't make sense, trust me, God is working a plan. He's working a plan. And let me show you. So Judas needed a time where he would be able to betray Jesus away from the crowd, but Jesus was working his plan that was greater than Judas's plan. Everything that's about to happen was showing you the plan of Jesus. Let me show you verse 7. Then came the day of the unleavened bread. Then the Passover must be killed. And he sent Peter and John, saying, "Go prepare us the Passover that we may eat." And they said unto him, "Where wilt thou that we prepare?" He goes, "What?" And they're sitting there going, "Lord Jesus, you set this up?" He said, "How are we going to do this?" Jesus had everything set up. And you say, why did Jesus do this way? Why did he not delegate it out? It was all strategies to make sure that Judas didn't know where it was. Jesus wanted Judas alone, and Judas wanted Jesus alone. They didn't know where it was at. He had this all set up. The timing of Jesus was perfect through this. When Judas goes to betray Jesus in the garden, it's because he knew that he was going to be there without a crowd. But he could not betray him at the Passover because Jesus set it up secretly. That's why in the garden, Jesus told the disciples that Judas was on his way. In Matthew 26, verse 46, it tells them that he says, "My betrayer, the time of my betrayer is here." And he gets up and they're like, "Well, what's going on?" And sure enough, here he comes. Jesus knew that it was time because it was, remember through all of this, that Jesus is 100% man and 100% God. And he shows that through them. Sometimes, notice this, as he's setting this up, and he said unto them, "Behold, when you enter into the city, there shall be a man meet you, bearing a pitcher of water. Follow him to the house where he entereth in." So you can imagine, as Jesus explained this, he doesn't say, "No, it's going to be at 6118, da-da-da," again, giving them the address or whatever. He said, "Lord, how will we know where to go?" He said, "Easy as this, you're going to walk into the city, and you're going to see a guy carrying a water pot. Follow him to his house." Now for us, we're being like, that's weird. I'm like, why not just tell me the guy? Jesus was proving his deity. "I know what's going to be happening when you get there. I know who's going to be walking, where is there." It was just proving his deity through this, proving that he had everything that's about to happen was done and orchestrated by the hand of God. "He shall say to the good men of the house, 'The master saith unto thee, where is thy guest chamber? Where shall I eat the Passover with my disciples?'" The guest chamber or the guest room was an open room that they would have. And some people think it was like a hotel or an inn, or it could have been something like we would even reference as like an Airbnb. It was an upper room that was extra for people that were coming in and traveling that you could rent out. Or it could have been Jesus had this friend or Jesus had this connection and said, "Can I use this as a private engagement for my disciples?" But we're not exactly sure what this is, but it was something related to that. "And he shall show you a large upper room," listen to this, "a large upper room furnished." Who said that? Jesus. Jesus said, "You go get the stuff, you prepare the meal, but when you get up there, you're going to walk into a room and you're going to see that it is all set up by the hand of God deliberately. It was furnished, set up. This was all by Jesus, the table, the location, the layout, the timing of it. So when they walk into the room, it is this picture that we see of the triglyphium. It is a three-sided table that we see of lounging at the table. Now, what I want to show you through this is a picture or a visual of God's grace. I say, I don't understand how that is a picture of God's grace. I'll explain. Jesus is about to preach one of his most passionate visual messages that he's ever preached. Judas gets the news. You can imagine as Jesus then says, "Go to get the disciples," and they're like, "We're going to have the Passover." "Oh, good. Tell me where it's at." He goes, no, you don't understand. Jesus set the whole thing up. "What? I got to go." "No, Judas, it's time to go. We have to go." Okay. So he doesn't get his chance to be able to go tell them where to arrest them, even though that would have been a perfect opportunity for them. There's no time to go tell the chief priests. So Jesus knew this. They come into the upper room. They walk in. There's no servants. We all know from the story who's going to be the servant. It would be Jesus. The one that would die on the cross is about to serve the failures. He's about to love on the ones that don't deserve it. The question is, who would have that seat of honor? Who got to sit next to Jesus and why? Jesus meets them there. We know in John 13:25, which is a parallel passage, he then lying on Jesus' breast saith unto him, Lord, who is it? After Jesus said that one of you is going to betray me. But let me show you who this is. So we know who one of them was sitting on the guest or the left and right of Jesus was Judas. And the other one was John. And Jesus answered and said, whom I shall give this sop when I have dipped it? And have dipped the sop, he gave it to Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon. So right there, left and right of Jesus is these places of honor. Now, we look at this and we're thinking, what in the world? I don't totally understand what's going on here because Judas didn't deserve that. Can you imagine Judas walking into this room that day and he knows the teaching of Jesus and all of them? The Bible would talk about how they would argue about who would be the greatest. You guys know what I'm talking about? Lord, who's going to sit at the right hand of, in the kingdom when you do it? And none of them knew. So they all debated and argued this. They were always wondering who would be this. So when Jesus gives this parable in chapter 14, none of them are going to rush in and just sit next to Jesus, although I guarantee you they're all thinking it. And Jesus comes in and goes to Judas when he walks in the room. And John, for whatever reason of that aspect, and says, Judas, you're with me. And he brings them over and he sits them down as he's in there. Now you got to understand, what in the world is going through the heart and mind of Judas? I'm about to be called out. He knows what I've done. I'm never going to be able to go tell them because I'm about, Jesus knows. Why is he picking me out like this? Why is he sitting next to me? Why am I in this place of honor? Jesus is standing there. Judas, sit here. Jesus rises up after that. He goes around the room, begins to take off his outer robe of representing his authority and his teaching. He gets out on his hands and knees and he begins to take their nasty feet one by one and begins to wash their feet. And I tell you, it's like all the things that we go through in life, it's just we're just messed up from this world. Representing just the trials and the failures and the things and just life. And Jesus is taking on the form of a servant. He serves them. He knew that all of them that night would be scattered. None of them would stay with him. He knew that Peter sitting there would betray him 3 times and he confronts him about that. There's Thomas over here, and Thomas would be the one that after the resurrection, he would doubt Jesus and even question that. And then you've got Judas above all of them that Jesus washed all their feet. The thing that blows my mind is why not just let him go and say, Judas couldn't be with us. He's got other things to do. But Jesus intentionally not only brought him to the supper, gave him the place of honor, serves him, loves him. Do you know what grace is? Grace is you getting what you don't deserve. Because if it would have been any one of us and it would have been our love doing this, in a second, what we would have done in that moment, I would have stood up and just said, this is the betrayer. He's about to stick me in the back. That's what I would do. I would use my power and authority and my position in that moment to knock him down and embarrass him. But instead, he sits in honor. And then he says these words. And this is what made me study this whole passage out. This is the whole reason I'm preaching this today. Because I didn't get it. I always wondered, and maybe some of you have wondered, is for like when he says, whoever I dip this sop and give it to, that is the betrayer, after he announces it. Well, I'm it's like putting an X on the guy or pointing him out. You know, it's like, it's him. But nobody knew it was him. Have you ever wondered how could Jesus point it out and nobody knows him? It doesn't make sense. So that's why I researched this out. And it turned into this entire message that I'm preaching today. He said, whoever I give this sop to, he will betray me. And the Bible says in John 13:28, even after he said this and did this, now no man at the table knew for what it intended that he spake this unto him. Nobody got it. Because of what Jesus did, didn't add up. Let me tell you guys, it didn't add up. Because Jewish tradition also goes further than this. And you have to understand what the sop was. The sop, listen to this. This is Jewish tradition. The sop is a Hebrew tradition of communion and fellowship. It's of intimacy and connection. It is basically eating bread dipped in a bowl in broth and sharing it with others. In the Hebrew tradition, you can either dip the bread in the same bowl or not. The dipping in the same bowl signifies that you are intimately connected with that person. What? It's not what I thought. I thought it was God's way of saying it's him and pointing his finger in his face. See, after Jesus leads them through the Passover meal, that communion time, and he explains the body and the bread, Jesus does the unthinkable. He picks up the bread and he breaks it. And you got to understand, the breaking of bread would be like us saying, hey, let's grab coffee. When we say let's grab coffee, we don't mean we need to go meet at a certain place and just get coffee. It literally means I want to connect with you. We should grab coffee means something. In their time, breaking of bread meant something. Jesus picked up the bread in fellowship and then takes it and dips it in the bitter herbs that was standing there representing the exit of Egypt of what God did to save them. And he doesn't just dip it and put it in his mouth. Listen to this. In Matthew, it tells us in verse 23, and he answered and said, he that dippeth his hand with me in the dish. You talk about God taking it. It's just a matter of not just doing it. Jesus, the Son of God, looks over as Judas is sitting there shaking and nervous and probably sweating. And what's going on here? Why am I here? And he grabs his hand, takes it, takes the bread, dips it in there, and puts it in his mouth. Not only giving him the seat of the highest honor, but demonstrating a demonstration of deep affection. The sop wasn't like, you betrayed me, you jerk. It was the complete opposite. It was saying, I love you. You know why? Because the love of God that we've been studying in 1 John is a love that doesn't give up. It doesn't fail. It doesn't walk out on us. It's constant and consistent. When Jesus told Judas, when he called him, I loved you, even at the very end, I know what you're about to do, and I want you to know as you do this, you are leaving me. I'm not leaving you. I love you unconditionally, and I am giving you the bread of life. I am offering unto you to the very end that you are pushing away the grace of God. This is a table of grace. So I don't know who you are here today that you're sitting there thinking that I don't deserve this. Let me just answer that for you. You're totally correct. None of us do. Not one of them at that table, but God used the demonstration of the one that would stab him in the back and betray him in front of everybody is a visual of that. That later they got it. They were like, he gave him the sop. He gave him the best seat. Why would he do that? For John to speak up and just say, because man, didn't he teach us to love our enemies and do good to them? He did that, but not betrayal. Even betrayal. So this time that we have is a time to reflect that every one of us have received what we don't deserve. The love of God, the connection to God, the intimacy with the Father, that you are honored, you are loved, and you are invited to the table of grace.